Hi, this is Tiffany the Last and guest pirate.
Sherry.
And we're on the phone with Rachel of the San Francisco Compact. Hi.
Hi, Tiffany. Hi, Sherry.
How you doing?
Good. It's a nice sunny morning in San Francisco.
Oh, wow. It's raining here. That's a switch.
Yeah, it was raining last night, but we've got a gorgeous day ahead of us.
You formed your group 2 years ago. Could you please tell our listeners what the Compact stands for and its purpose?
Yeah, the Compact actually started as a small challenge among 10 friends to not buy anything new for a year except for food, health, and safety items that we were willing to accept. And that was for the calendar year of 2006. And that came about as a response to the limitations of recycling and just the amount of waste that we as Americans contribute to each year.
Can you tell us, why does your group feel that the consumer culture is so negative, is so bad?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of us come to this from different perspectives, and definitely the environmental and ecological impacts of overconsumption were kind of the binding force between the 10 of us originally. All of us are very concerned about different ways of helping to reduce our ecological footprints and not being overconsumptive, and understanding that our lifestyles cannot be broadcast to all the people on this planet. It's just not physically possible. And when you think about overconsumption in those terms, it just seems a little unfair to continue to take a part in it. So trying to be the most responsible that we can be. And then for myself, just really not having a lot of agreement with our economic systems and the way that our resources are distributed within this country and also on a global scale.
And you mentioned that it started with 10 people, and I think there's quite a few people that seem to be agreeing with what you stand for, because I read that there's now 9,000 people part of your group in various areas around the world. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, and that number, it kind of turns over all the time, and it continues to go toward 9,000. It's probably on that main Yahoo group about 8,500 now.
Wow.
But we get new people all the time. So it's, you know, whatever their connection is to this concept of overconsumption, if it's socioeconomic, if it's their own economic paradigm, if it's environmental, then they can step into something like this and take part in it, because it's not a very, it's not structured in such a way to be preachy at people. That's not the point. So they can kind of get engaged in it. But I would say that number has definitely turned over 5 or 6 times, and that probably around, 35,000 people have probably engaged in this somehow, like just through that one Yahoo group. And there are people from, you know, as far away as Singapore and Iceland, and, you know, folks all over California, of course.
Rachel, yes, I'm curious, as a result of the group's participation in this, the Compact group, did you become more aware of what you were spending money on? Did you save money? Did you save time?
Yeah, I definitely started to realize that I spent money in very frivolous ways. There were a couple times in the beginning that I was literally at a grocery store and I had somehow picked up something that just wasn't food and just kind of took it with me. And I don't actually remember what that stuff was, but just recognizing that there were almost, I don't know, zombie purchases where you didn't even know that you were going to buy it, and then you bought it and you don't really know why. And then I definitely saved money. But then this year I decided that rather than just saving money, which I had done the first year of the Compact, that I'd also like to work less, just to kind of pursue my reasons of wanting to do the Compact a little bit more thoroughly and not just engaging in sort of the overworking aspect of our culture either. I come from a family of workaholics, so it's good for me to recognize that.
And what, when you told your family you were going to do this, what were some of the responses you got?
For the most part, people are really supportive. I mean, my mom and dad are definitely the kind of folks that gave me these sort of principles of buying local, and we shopped at thrift stores all the time when I was a kid, mostly because my mom likes a bargain.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're pretty supportive. I don't know is that they engage so much with, they understand that I'm very passionate about ecological concerns, but the more anti-capitalist issues that I engage in are not necessarily well received. And then there are some members of my family that just think I'm weird. You know, I have a pretty large extended family, and it's perceived very differently
mm-hmm.
among different folks.
Well, Rachel, among the members of the group that had families, and if there were children in the immediate family, was there a perceivable change in the feel of the family holidays? And what was the influence or effect, if any, on the children?
You know, my friends John and Rob have two kids, and actually Louisa was adopted right at the beginning of the compact as an infant. So the whole thing was, it was a great fun challenge among all of us. And I don't think that anything really changed for them. John can score the coolest used toys you've ever seen. Ben has got this amazing fire truck that came out of the San Francisco dump, and it's just the bee's knees, man. He just loves it, and he definitely, neither one of those kids is going without in any respect, because we throw away so much shit every day
mm-hmm.
that, you can live like an American by not buying, because, I see it's called the bulky item collection here in San Francisco, and it's basically when people are sending their big stuff to the landfill. And I watched this dump truck twice in the past 2 weeks crush up, like, perfectly usable furniture, like dressers and a lot of exercise equipment. Well, we're not going without. This isn't some sort of, martyrdom. We're really not suffering.
And you are still putting money back into the markets, because you are going to thrift stores, and it's not like you're not spending money.
Yeah, exactly. And Thrift Town is a thrift store chain out west, and that is actually on a for-profit model. It's not even community oriented, and they have good stuff. I get a lot of coffee cups there for my bicycle.
Uh-huh. And then I also read about a place where you can go and barter, and it's free at the really, really free market.
Yeah, except it's not barter. It's all gift economy.
Oh,
so
okay.
The really, really free market is probably one of my favorite expressions of ideas like the compact and reducing your consumption. And that's because it's not just not doing something. I mean, I love the compact in that it started a lot of discussion and creative thinking around how to acquire the things that you need without totally buying into the system, but the really, really free market offers an actual alternative under the idea that we all have something to give, and people give actual things because I don't really shop, and I'm able to take something almost all the time, and part of that is because people now think of me as a clearinghouse, or like, my God, she doesn't shop, we should give her this. But also because we always have excess, and your excess may be exactly what someone else has been looking for the past 6 months. So, yeah, it's a wonderful project, and it's all over the U.S. You can find really, really free markets, and if there isn't one around you, then you should start one.
It sounds like a great idea, actually. Can you tell us more about the emergency purchases that you allowed in the group?
Yeah, well, the thing is, you're pretty much allowed to do anything you want. We're really not dogmatic, and no one's going to, throw you out of the compact if you buy something. But what we had were exceptions, so health and safety, I think. So, if you broke your ankle, please don't go skimping on the plastic brace from Thrift Town. Just get the one your doctor's trying to sell you new. Things like that. And I, for one, because I have a very physically demanding lifestyle, I have always bought new shoes throughout this entire challenge. So I recently found them on eBay. I have mixed emotions about eBay because of the packaging and the shipping, but I don't know, that $50 savings, I might have to go with eBay. I've never bought anything on eBay, but then I was like, God, these shoes are so expensive. But So things like some people take professional exceptions, and then there were really weird things like, oh gosh, windshield wiper blades. Now, I ride a bicycle, but I don't want anyone out there not buying windshield wiper blades because they're going to hit me. So please buy that sort of thing.
So it's just more trying to make people more aware of what they're buying and purchasing, and maybe not be such, you don't have to be an extremist about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't actually think that the compact is all that extreme. I really didn't. It's actually pretty easy, and it's pretty fun. I mean, there are times where you just get, I mean, you get dogmatic with yourself. I know that I stand in front of something and go, oh, man, plastic headband. Damn, I broke mine. I really want to keep my hair out of my face. Oh, God, it's a plastic headband wrapped in a piece of cardboard. I don't know. And that is just, I mean, I could have gone out and planted an aster in McLaren Park or something by the time I'm done with that conversation with myself.
I read about another project that you're involved with, the DIY restoration project. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, so one of my other passions is urban habitat restoration, and I have a really good friend who grows some really amazing plants here in the city that are all from local seed, and he makes his own soil, and very compact-friendly plants. And so I want to get people engaged. We're just entering the planting season. You're talking about those rains, and this is when California wants to have new things put into its soil. And so trying to engage people with that concept to give them a different connection to the land here, give them something to steward. And there are a lot of unclaimed spaces in San Francisco and other cities and towns, and trying to get folks to reclaim those by sticking some plants in the dirt, maybe in our abandoned sidewalk plots or spaces that have just kind of like become blighted and wherever. And if you have a backyard, I mean, that's always your first spot. So trying to create wildlife habitat in some of our more neglected areas of the city.
That sounds great. And this also sounds like another thing that could spread around, not just in San Francisco, because especially on the sidewalk. I mean, we all have those little patches. Great.
Yeah. I would love to see that spread around. That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm going to take us back to the whole plastic headband thing, Rachel.
Right on.
We had read in an article recently about your sort of transitioning back to buying a bit. How is that going? It sounds like it might be a little frustrating.
Well, what I did was I decided to take July off, like start compacting again before the holidays, because that's really what got a lot of us involved in this, was just the crazy holiday.
Right.
Buy it because it's there. Freakishness.
Right.
But I found that, you know, I kept going, and I would, like, I had this sort of, like, list of things I really wanted to buy, and I would get there, and one of the things that's been on the list for, like, I don't know, since I started the compact is a new windbreaker, and every time I try to buy it, though, it's kind of ugly, which just, you know, puts me off, you know, and then, you know, you flip it open, and it says, you know, made in Vietnam, and I'm like, shit, I just can't buy this. You know, and it's, and clothes shopping is a personal sort of hell, as it is for, I know, other people, but those three factors, and I just end up walking out. So I took July, and I bought some things, and I was like, okay. And then some of them I didn't even like, and I gave them away immediately, and I was like, what the hell am I doing? So I feel like what I've done is I've kind of tried to let up on the, you know, the freaking out about the plastic headband thing, and try to be a little bit more forgiving of myself in that way. And it's not going to happen, apparently, the whole going back to.
Since you've been involved and really been aware of consumerism in the past 2 years, and it sounds like you've been giving it a lot of thought, could you tell me, since we all have to go out and buy things, what would the ideal situation be for you if you could just make something up and so that you could just feel free and do it without having to obsess about things?
Yeah, that's great. What an awesome question. So if I could walk into a shop, it would be, there are so many aspects of this, but it would be a worker-owned shop that I was walking into, and that would be one of the first things that I would look for. It wouldn't be a chain store. It would be locally owned and organized. And preferably, I mean, when you have that sort of a system set up, those people are automatically going to be more interested in providing you with stuff that comes from the same sort of a genesis. Mm-hmm. So I would want products that were also locally made, things that weren't shipped super far away, and things that are not overpackaged. Packaging just blows my head open. I can't stand it. Mm-hmm. So those would be the top things that I would be looking for, because the farther something comes, the more of an impact that it has. Usually things like water and carbon emissions. The more packaging, you have the exact same thing, but also with packaging, you have disposal, and you just increase the life of whatever it is you're buying by wrapping it in plastic. So those would be probably my most ideal choices. People getting paid a fair wage, having a stake in their job, having some sort of job security, providing me with products that I need, not shit that I don't need, not just greenwashing, our purchases and saying, oh, this is an environmentally friendly thing that you just don't need.
Mm-hmm. What's greenwashing?
Greenwashing is becoming really popular among especially large corporations. You might think of PG&E's campaign. Maybe you guys have it down there. Oh, wait, you guys don't have PG&E.
We have SDG&E, yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, up here, PG&E, our electric company, is trying to get in our good graces by talking about their green initiatives. Yeah. But as it turns out, they're barely involved in any of that, and they're basically just trying to sway public opinion so that the next time we try to communalize our power sources, we're like, oh, PG&E's okay. Mm-hmm. But it's more than that. It's magazines trying to sell you an eco-friendly hot tub. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
Now, that kind of excess is totally all right, man. Go ahead. Buy that hot tub because, it runs on solar. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. Or your eco-friendly espresso machine, because everybody needs their own. And that sort of pushing this idea that, it's all okay. You can have your American luxury if you can afford it, of course, because we've made this product have a lower, usually it's a carbon impact. I'm sure that espresso machine comes wrapped in a ton of cardboard. I should order one to find out.
We were talking about that earlier, actually. We were talking about just that sort of thing. We get kind of frustrated in our environment with the McMansions, people in the McMansions, and not investing in, say, solar panels because of how it might look on their, on their red tile roofs. What other advice do you have for people who are getting frustrated by the apathy in their communities? I mean, the really, really free market obviously is one great idea. What other suggestions do you have?
Finding ways to network with folks that are right there with you and seeing what you can produce in your community, like an info shop or something like a market, that shows and demonstrates to other people that there are alternatives. And I mean, when you're constantly staring at excess and it's constantly foisted on you, it can be hard to get sort of creative. But if you network with people, then you'll find that, it's very comforting to know that you're not the only one that thinks that, McMansions are over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you can work, legally with your zoning and your supervisor, but a lot of those things may not bring you any sort of joy or happiness, and they may just kind of bog you down. So I kind of like these discrete community projects. I know that a lot of folks there are a lot of them out there that are pushing the tech fix and pushing the big picture, but I think that for those of us who are frustrated, it becomes equally as important to actually engage in something that we find is contributing to a solution. It's our way of contributing to a solution. If you're economically not as powerful as your McMansion neighbor, or you're not as tied into the political structure, then your impact may be creating a community sort of response, mm-hmm. or a community alternative is probably more accurate and more viable, mm-hmm. instead of engaging in big campaigns run by big interest groups or whatever. I mean, get in where you feel comfortable in terms of, if it's political people in your area or whatever, but, you know, just be on the lookout for other folks that are also feeling the same way that you are.
Thank you. Good suggestion.
Well, thank you, Rachel, for all the information. And we are Pirate Pods, and we like to end our podcast with an R or a pirate impression. Can you do that for us?
Oh, yeah, totally. R.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.